Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, welcome to another Tweaked Tuesday here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Ann Ubellis, the radio chick. Want to welcome people into the chat room, and our phone lines are open to call in. It's 917-889-3675. Just have one local announcement going on, and this is for next Tuesday, November 15th. The Hilton Head Tea Party has joined and is being co-sponsored by the Bluffton Tea Party and the Beaufort Tea Party in having a straw poll. This will be from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. November 15th, Tuesday evening. It will be at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, which is located within the Hargrave Building at the University of South Carolina Gateway Campus. That's at 1 University Boulevard in Bluffton, South Carolina. The theme of the meeting is T-minus 12 months and counting to the November 12 elections. And South Carolina State Senator Tom Davis will be there. He will speak. Representative Tim Scott will have a video pre-recorded address, and meeting organizers will also air short videos submitted by the GOP candidates. Each one of the candidates have submitted a short video, and afterwards they will conduct a straw poll. They do invite you to bring signs over and ask. Derogatory signs will not be permitted. They also have voter registration forms and information there. So for information, you can contact Kate Keep at area code 843-816-1806. So if anyone is in the South Carolina area and wants to participate in this video and straw poll on November 15th, feel free to message me and I can give you the details also. Want to welcome Mike Bonner is in the house, as well as Tesla. Welcome, gentlemen. And I was going to concentrate on doing information about, because today is Election Day, I was going to concentrate on doing things about the elections today and coming into next year, but was struck with the news this morning that Smoking Joe Frazier has succumbed to his two-month-long battle of liver cancer, and he passed. Those who are old enough to remember Smoking Joe in his striking three bouts with Muhammad Ali, the first one 1971, where he knocked Muhammad Ali out, the first person to ever do that, and then he lost the final two, which culminated in the Thriller in Manila. And Smoking Joe, believe it or not, was born and grew up just a couple of miles away from where I am now, in an area of Beaufort called Laurel Bay. And Laurel Bay actually is the area directly across from the Marine Corps Air Station. And that's just a couple of miles down the road. And there was a 10-acre track his family owned. And they called it, the track on there, they called it white dirt. And the reason being is they couldn't grow anything on there outside of watermelon and corn. Yeah, anything else they tried to grow, the soil just wouldn't handle it. So he grew up on this 10-acre farm that was just a couple of miles away from here. And ESPN did a nice tribute to him last night. So let me play this ESPN tribute.
At the moment in his life when it mattered most, in perhaps the biggest fight between men since David challenged Goliath, with hundreds of millions of his fellow humans invested in the outcome, it was Joe Frazier who emerged victorious.
Now, what you guys going to say now?
What you say now? Huh?
Born in South Carolina in 1944, Joseph William Frazier would gravitate to boxing as a teenager. Stocky and powerful, he went to Tokyo for the 1964 Olympics and came home with the heavyweight gold medal. After the games, Frazier turned pro and rapidly ascended the heavyweight ranks. At the same time, there was a new heavyweight champion chopping down every opponent in his path. But in 1967, when Muhammad Ali refused induction into the military, he was stripped of the title, which became Frazier's when he stopped Buster Mathis and then Jimmy Ellis. Still, with Ali in exile, Frazier was only some people's champion. Finally, in 1970, after 3 years out of the game, Ali was back, and he set his sights on a showdown with Frazier. The so-called main event was scheduled for March 8, 1971 at Madison Square Garden. The stage had been set for perhaps the most eagerly anticipated sports event ever. Two undefeated heavyweights, both with reasonable claims to the world title, both with legions of ardent admirers and equally ardent detractors. In the build-up, Ali cruelly taunted Frazier, who loaned him money when he was broke, calling Frazier ugly and worse. Somehow, the fight lived up to its billing. Frazier withstood Ali's early onslaught and slowly built momentum, eventually grinding Ali down. In the 15th round, Frazier, floral green trunks, knocked down Ali for only the third time in his career. The decision was unanimous. Joe Frazier was still the heavyweight champion. For 2 years, Frazier reigned at the top of his sport, but then, in January 1973, he ran into a human buzzsaw named George Foreman. In two rounds, Frazier was knocked down six times, and the title passed to Foreman. Over the next couple of years, there would be four non-title bouts for Frazier, including one against Ali. But then, in 1975, Frazier was given one last chance to reclaim the title, a third fight against Ali, who had stunned Foreman the year before. The epic Thriller in Manila was gory and glorious. The protagonists were both past their peaks, but they put on a brilliant, devastating show. After the 14th round, Frazier's trainer, Eddie Futch, refused to allow him to continue. Frazier had lost, but in losing, had honored himself. When it was over, Ali said, "I'm just happy right now. There ain't no more Joe Frazier's to fight." In retirement, Frazier remained a constant presence ringside at big fights, in beer commercials, in interviews where he alternately expressed anger and admiration for Ali, his eternal opponent. Overshadowed by the man he defeated in his most significant fight, Frazier goes down as one of the great heavyweights. If Ali was the hope, the face, the voice of a movement, Frazier was instead a fighter's fighter. That was good enough for him.
Smoking Joe Frazier, 32-4-1 record as a pro, held the world heavyweight title from 1968 to 1973. He's one of eight fighters to win the heavyweight gold medal and world championship. His left hook, one of the most feared punches in boxing history. And Muhammad Ali found out the hard way. That's the punch that put Ali on the mat in the 15th round of their fight of the century in 1971, a fight won by Frazier.
Wow. Now, that is a legend. Smoking Joe Frazier grew up right here in Buford in an area known as Laurel Bay, which is across from the Marine Corps Air Station now. His family owned 10 acres of farmland there. And as I said, they called it white dirt. And the reason why, because they couldn't grow anything else on there besides cotton and watermelon. But Joe Frazier's dad wasn't going to worry about that. He also had himself a bootleg still on the farm, believe it or not. Now, in the 50s, his dad turned around and bought an old black and white TV, and it was the only TV that was in the neighborhood. So what would happen was all people would come around from the neighborhood, they'd pay his mom a quarter, and they'd sit around and watch TV. They'd watch the boxing matches on TV. And Joe Frazier's uncle, his uncle's name was Israel, turned around and said to him one day, he goes, "You know what? This boy, he's going to be the next fighter. He's going to be another Joe Louis." And that's when Joe Frazier decided he was going to start to work himself up. He took an old burlap bag. He filled it. In the center of it was a brick. And then he filled it up with what we call Spanish moss and other things in there. And he made his own heavy bag. And he hung it up on a tree. And every single day he would take an hour and spar with that bag. That's how Joe Frazier got his start in boxing. Now, growing up in the South in the 50s and 60s was not, I would say, a very good place for a black man to be. And consequently, he was working on a farm. I'm trying to remember, because the farm is still here. Matter of fact, you can pass it when you go up Route 21. I'm trying to remember what the heck the name of the farm was. But it was a family farm. It was owned by two brothers. And he watched one of the brothers take his belt off and beat another black kid, a 12-year-old that was working on the farm, because he busted up a piece of the farm equipment, whatever it was. It was something stupid. And Joe Frazier turned around, went back to his friends and told his friends what happened. Well, the word got back to one of the two brothers. So next time Joe Frazier went back to the farm, oh, the farm's name is Bellamy. That's what I was trying to remember. I was thinking Everett. No, Bellamy was the name of the farm. Well, this one guy, Bellamy, turns around and he says, "I'm taking my belt off. I'm going after you." And Joe Frazier told him, "Nope, no, you're not," and made him back down. Consequently, Joe Frazier knew he couldn't stay in Buford because as soon as that white man got the word around, Joe Frazier is not going to have any work. Well, eventually he was able to scrape up enough money. He went off to a family member that lived in New York, and that's how he ended up coming into Philadelphia and his boxing career. We got a caller in on the line. I do have a listener in Isaac, and unfortunately Isaac was having a lot of feedback or noise in the background, so I had to mute his mic. Let me bring this other caller up on the line. And area code 267, you're on Southern Sense. Who am I speaking to?
Yeah, this is John. I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Hi, John. How you doing today?
All right. I just want to speak to what you were speaking about, Joe Frazier. Is where he lived is called North Philadelphia.
Right.
It's a largely African-American neighborhood, very similar to Harlem, New York. And basically in that neighborhood there's a lot of poverty, and he basically came up in that type of environment. I understand he originally came from South Carolina, and his family moved into that area. But a lot of the Rocky movies were basically based on his story of him hitting meat in a slaughterhouse and like running through the streets of Philadelphia.
Right.
So that was basically based on his whole life. But I think the parallel with a Muhammad Ali and a Joe Frazier was that the fight between the two of them really was a fight between like two different types of ideologies which were occurring during that period in time. You had Ali on the side of the militants who wanted to go against society, and you had Joe Frazier on the side of like the blue-collar African-Americans who were just trying to work hard and just make their way up in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it was these. So it was more than a fight. It was a fight between politics as well.
That's very true, because originally, and this is, very few people know that, when Ali was banned from the World Boxing Association, when he was banned because he became an objector to the Vietnam War, he would not get drafted, he refused, and he said it was based upon his Muslim beliefs, the WBA suspended him. What very few people know is Frazier went to the mat for him and fought to have him reinstated, going insofar as contacting President Nixon. And very few people know that Joe Frazier stood up for him. When Ali was down and out and broke, it was Frazier who lent them the money and helped him pull himself back up. So the reason why Frazier was so angry and so upset and hurt by what Muhammad Ali did was because here he was, a man who put his hand out and helped another fellow boxer, and he got called a gorilla. He got called an Uncle Tom. There was a lot of bad blood afterwards, simply because Muhammad Ali just started calling him names and bad-mouthing him up in public. And that's very unfortunate, because they would have been absolutely perfect friends. But
Well, there's also this dichotomy in the African-American community between light skin and dark skin. And Joe Frazier basically came from the Deep South. His features were more African in nature. And Ali's features were, I wouldn't say he had Caucasian features, but his features were not as dark in complexion as Joe Frazier. So Ali was using that contrast, the fact that Joe Frazier had more African-type features, and to a lot of African-Americans, they see that as being ugly, like if someone is darker in complexion. So he was using that to kind of put Joe Frazier down. And it was the fact that Ali was saying that he was a representation of the new black man that was emerging on the scene at that time, and Joe Frazier was a throwback to the past. And I think we can see a definite parallel when we look in the politics today of a Herman Cain and a Barack Obama. Barack Obama probably has a Muslim past, just like Muhammad Ali. Barack Obama represents kind of a revolution or a new type of person coming on the scene. He has more of an international appeal. And Herman Cain is basically a person from the South who basically came from a blue-collar background, who had to work very hard to get to where he is.
Now, this is very true. You also have it where Muhammad Ali had a certain charisma. The cameras loved
him. Right, yeah.
Whereas Joe Frazier was a school dropout. He was known as a backwoods boy, basically.
Right.
And a lot of people thought he slurred, but he didn't slur. What he did was he spoke what they call Gullah. And Gullah is a mixture of languages that the slaves had developed here on the Sea Islands. You know, the area of Beaufort is known as the Sea Islands. But Gullah is spoken from Florida all the way up through North Carolina, if you find the old enclaves. And he had a thick Gullah accent. And if you don't know the pattern of the speech, you wouldn't understand what he's saying. So here you have the unrefined going up against the refined and charismatic. That was another clash that they had. But you remember, well, I'm sure you're much younger, but I remember when he made it into the Olympics, and he wasn't supposed to be. He actually went up against this guy, Buster Mathis. And Buster Mathis was this fat one. I mean, he was a down and out. He was on the way down. But Buster Mathis ended up winning the seat to go into the Olympics, and he went up against Joe Frazier. But what Buster Mathis did was, and this was in Joe Frazier's book, he would wear his boxing trunks up so high, as he said, they went up to his titties, so that every time Joe Frazier threw a legal punch, it was technically below the belt line because he wore his boxing shorts so high. And that's how he didn't make it on the first cut. So he went in as a backup, you know, as in case something happened to Mathis. Well, when they got to the Olympics there, Mathis wasn't doing the full workout and runs, where Joe Frazier was sparring with anyone and everyone. He'd do the full workout, the full runs. The night before the boxing match, Mathis claims to have hurt his hand, and that's how Joe Frazier ended up getting into the Olympics and getting the gold medal. But the morning of that fight, Joe Frazier saw Mathis, and there was nothing wrong with his hand.
Right.
And it is this, some of the things that happened in his life is just absolutely, absolutely amazing. Now, I
right.
do have the clip of the final round, the 15th round, where Joe Frazier knocked out Muhammad Ali. And let me play this for you. I mean, just close your eyes, because I was watching it on YouTube just to remind myself, and some of the things I forgot. You know, but of course, you know, you're talking about 1971. That was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So let me play this clip, and I want to remind you, when you're listening to it, you're going to hear a little bit of a pause as the announcer is speaking. At one point, Muhammad Ali is looking like he's about ready just to fall over. His arms are hanging completely limp at his side, and he's starting to teeter side to side. And Joe Frazier takes him in a clutch to keep him from hitting the mat at one point. It was shortly after that he landed the knockout punch. Let me play this clip.
All right, this is the final round of the fight, and what a fight it's been.
And final round.
Referee Arthur McCowney has them touch gloves, something they've been doing all night. Now, Muhammad Ali's going to go boxing again. And Frazier gets in to nullify that attack. Step back, says the referee. Time is important here.
Never occurred.
Less than a minute to go. Muhammad Ali gamely fights back. And Ali again makes the clinch. Remember, the scoring is on a round basis. Frazier is tired and his eyes are closing. Half a minute to go. Frazier has won the big round. The 11th and the 15th, at least up to now. Frazier has the man in the corner. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. We'll have an interview with the winner and maybe with the loser. There it is.
That is all.
Now, ladies and gentlemen,
here comes
the
decision. Johnny Addy.
Referee Arthur McCanty scores it 8-6, one even for Frazier.
One vote for Joe Frazier.
Addy Idala, 9-6 for Frazier.
Frazier is the winner. Frazier is the winner.
Correct. 11 rounds for Frazier.
final.
Champion of the world, Joe Frazier.
Joe Frazier. For the first time in his career, Muhammad Ali was beaten.
Now, you listen to the announcer, if you watch the video and you listen to the announcer, it doesn't match exactly. It's as if the announcer wanted Muhammad Ali to be the winner. So, and some of the things he kept on saying, that Ali's going to come out with a round of flurry punches, never happened. Ali just could not even get a punch in there. It's
well,
amazing.
I think that Muhammad Ali won a lot of fights, and I think it was a Norman Mailer who analyzed Ali's career over a long period of time. He won a lot of fights because he used his intelligence to beat people. And because in the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman was certainly stronger than Ali, but he was able to fake George Foreman out because he basically kind of allowed him to kind of punch himself out. So yeah, I think it was a combination of his charisma and his ability to use strategy in the ring that basically won him the adoration of a lot of boxing fans.
Right, right. Now, are you aware of how Joe Frazier got his wicked, wicked left hook? Very few people know about this. On the farm they had out here in South Carolina, they had this humongous hog. The hog was something like about 300 pounds and was an ornery old cuss. And Joe Frazier used to love to tease the damn thing. Now, I don't know if I want to be messing around with a 300 wild hog, not particularly. Well, they left the gate open one day. So Joe Frazier, not even knowing that the gate was open, started poking at the hog. The hog got out and started chasing him down. Joe Frazier fell. And when he fell onto a brick or something like that, and his left arm got tore open really bad. But because they were poor, they couldn't afford a doctor, so you had to let the arm heal the way it healed. And that's how he got a permanent right hook. The arm never straightened out. He could never get a full extension on his left arm. So it was always set in that punch position. And that's how he ended up with such a powerful left hook.
Oh, I hadn't realized that. No, I didn't know that.
Ah, I tell you, the place I live here in Beaufort, South Carolina, is really interesting. Matter of fact, Joe Frazier was here just a little over a year ago, September last year, and Governor Mark Sanford presented him with the Palmetto Award, which is the highest civilian award you can get here in South Carolina. And we had a whole big to-do here. They had it in the downtown area. And he's such a gentleman. He is such a gentleman. And the whole town turned out to honor Joe Frazier and give him the award. Little did we know that he only had a year left to live. Man, what a man. Well, our call-in line is open. Please give us a shout. It's 917-889-3675. And our chat room's open. Want to welcome everyone in there. See Doc Jones is in there. He's joined us. I see you, John, in there. And I see Thomas and Tesla is in there. So please give a shout in, and let's talk about a little bit of George Foreman, you know, not George Foreman, George Frazier. And, man, he tried to do a comeback in the 80s, which was rather failed. Now, John, up until 2 years ago, he still had his gym down there, didn't he?
Yeah, the gym is still there. I don't know whether he still owns it or not.
I think he sold it back in 2009.
Oh, I'm not exactly sure, but it's in a section of the city called North Philadelphia, and it's on North Broad Street. In fact, it's not too far from Mosque Number 12, which is the Nation of Islam Mosque, which is famous for Malcolm X. Malcolm X helped to develop that mosque. In fact, Joe Frazier's gym is like a block away from Mosque Number 12.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow. Now, according to, I pulled up some of his background up in Wikipedia and stuff. There is a movie that was put together. It's an indie movie. And let me see if I can find the website for it. I had it right here just a second ago. But someone made a movie about him 2 years ago. And I think it's called Indiegogo, I think is the website. Just bear with me while I'm trying to find it here. I got so many pieces of paper around here. It's not here. I don't know what I did with it. All right, but there is a movie out, and I believe it's Indiegogo. If someone wants to look it up, do a little Google. I'm going to just type in, I think it's Indiegogo. Should be the site. They're looking for donations to help get this released into the theaters. So if anyone wants to take a look at that, there is a Joe Frazier movie up on this website, Indiegogo, for Joe Frazier. And I saw a promo clip from it, and it looked like it was pretty good. But Joe Frazier was not a big man. You know,
he was about 5'10", I think.
It says 5'11 and a half.
Oh.
I guess that's before he gets his haircut.
I have some pictures of him standing next to people that I have seen in person on Facebook, and he looks to be about 5'10".
Yeah, so, well, if you watched him in the fights, if you go back, because they had the clips up on YouTube, if you watch him in the fights with Muhammad Ali, he's almost a head shorter than Muhammad Ali.
Yeah,
and it's amazing.
And Muhammad Ali was listed at 6'3", and I have some pictures of some people that I know in person who's standing next to Muhammad Ali, and Muhammad Ali is about 6'2", 6'3". So I think Joe Frazier is probably he's listed at 5'11". He's probably 5'10", 5'11", something like that.
Yeah, they're listing him as 5'11" and a half.
That's not
a tall man when you consider the size of boxers. And growing up, watching fighters, he was watching Sugar Ray Robinson. I can't believe. I mean, I remember watching Sugar Ray Robinson and stuff. My grandfather was into boxing and wrestling, and he would watch it on TV. And Rocky Graziano, oh, man. All these great ones that he watched, and I guess that's where he learned and developed his style before he ended up having a professional trainer.
But I think the most important thing about Ali Frazier, as I had stated, was this battle in the black community between the blue-collar working class and the militants. And basically with the militants, Ali was basically kind of a representation of the militant side of the black community. And I think Obama has now filled that void. And even among blacks that are professionals, doctors and lawyers, a lot of them still have this side of them where they want to be militant. So they would side with Ali even though they were in a very good profession where they were making money because of their education and they believe their understanding of slavery. They still have a revolutionary or kind of a militant side. So what you saw in the black community is you saw the black community split between people who were the type where they said, well, this is a good, decent country. If you work hard, you can get somewhere, whereas other people said this country is inherently evil to its core and it doesn't matter what you do. If you're black, the person's only going to get so far. So I think we're seeing this play out again when we look at the rivalry between Cain and Obama, and I think it's the exact same thing. And it's not only a prize fight, it's a fight between two different ideas.
You've got the old South compared to the new generation is basically
what it was. Right, yes.
But what people didn't realize is that Joe Frazier was not someone, when he was living here, to back down to anyone, which is one of the reasons why he ended up having to leave Beaufort, because he knew he wasn't going to be able to make a living. Because he was someone that was just saying, hey, listen, you can try to do that to this person, but you ain't doing it to me. And he had the balls in a time to stand up to these white farmers. And we've got another caller coming in, and let me bring this person in, and let me get the mic on, and we can do this right here. See what happens when I don't have a cool mic helping me here. Hello, Thomas. You're on the air.
What's up, Annie?
How you doing?
I am good. I wanted to call in before I go get ready to go to class.
We were doing a little bit of a tribute to Joe Frazier, who passed away yesterday.
Oh, I've been listening since the very beginning, actually. But I wanted to call in because I like how this brother is talking. He's on point. Now, I want to ask a question, and I could be wrong on this, but the caller sounds like he's a black conservative.
John is. John,
yes,
is known as American Citizen. He has his own show. John Neat Thomas, who's the invisible conservative.
I wouldn't consider myself a complete conservative right now. I basically vote as an independent. I don't endorse either party because I think there's problems in both parties. And if Ron Paul ran as an independent in the general election, I think at this point, I would probably vote for Ron Paul. So I would say that I'm an independent right now.
Well, let me actually share a little something about the whole liberal and conservative. There are liberal people who aren't Democrats, just like there are conservative people who aren't Republican. I am a conservative. I'm not a registered Republican or Democrat. And the reason, and see, that's kind of this another myth that, you know, has been perpetuated on us as Americans, because we think, okay, conservative, Republican, liberal, Democrat. That's not necessarily the case. And so, just like you, I am an independent, but I am a conservative independent, and I'm not registered Republican because the Republican Party walked away from their roots. And you have the establishment GOP leaving Herman Cain out to dry because they want him to fall, because they want their stinking establishment players in there.
Right.
And so I mean, I know what you're saying, but you, because by nature, we in the black community, we're conservative by nature. Most of our community don't realize that we're supposed to be pro-family, pro-God, anti-abortion, you know, and things like that. Those
right.
are conservative values. but somehow, some way or other, someone thought that it was okay to marginalize us, tell us, as you so eloquently put, that the only way we can get ahead in life is if we depend on government cheese and whatever those other things they used to give out with government commodities. You guys remember government commodities and all that?
Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, I grew up getting government commodities and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is this, as well as you know, we don't have to be marginalized by liberals, let's just say Democrat, Republican, or anyone else, because we are capable of being successful in businesses other than sports or entertainment. You know, we have the intelligence and we have the full capabilities, but we have to stop allowing liberals to define us, the Democratic Party telling us what we can and can't be.
Well, one thing that happens in black people, it doesn't matter what their economic strata is, they subconsciously, they put white people on a pedestal, and they believe that because of slavery, and if they have that militant outlook of a Muhammad Ali,
right.
they believe that the government owes them something.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what type of class they may fall into. They inherently deep down believe that if they're receiving any type of subsidy from the government, that is owed to them because of slavery.
Right. Right. Well, quite frankly, I'm going to tell you what. I got mad yesterday. Actually, I've been mad for the last few days, so I've been kind of taking it out on my show. But I really went off yesterday in the first hour of my show, because just how they're coming out with these attacks against Herman Cain. I took it personally, because essentially what that message said to me is that You can't be successful unless I allow you to be successful. That's the message of the Democratic Party, extreme liberals to black conservatives. And me being a black conservative and someone working towards starting my own business, I got angry because, quite frankly, it insults me to tell me that the only way I can be successful in life is depending on the government and all that good stuff. I made fun of the word government by saying government. But anyway, you know, I don't need government to help me start my business. I have enough God-given ability and creativity where I can put together a well thought out innovative product, go to people that I know and believe in and say, hey, this is what I'm doing and this is the plans. Here's my proposal. Will you invest in me? That's how I'm going to do it. I'm not going to depend on government small business loans and all that stuff anymore, because when the government has their tentacles in you and you build a successful business, then they try to milk you for everything you have. And I'm not going there anymore.
That's an excellent thing, Thomas, because each time I started a business, I did it completely on my own, my husband and I. We didn't look for anyone. We didn't take any loans out. We just put money aside, and when we could buy a piece of equipment, we bought it.
Right.
And that's how we did it, by our bootstraps. Now, I have this clip. Now, I have to tell you, this clip came from Rick Johnson. He's got Paul Revere Radio here on BPR.
Uh-huh.
So I told him I will credit him with this clip. But I'm going to play this for you. This has to do with Obama. And tell me, just try not to laugh too loudly when you listen to the fool on this. Hang on.
Okay.
They're coming to take me away, ha ha. They're coming to take me away, ho ho, hee hee, ha ha. To the happy home.
I see a Cuba flag here in your windshield. Is that the type of society? Is that a model of Cuba society?
No, not Cuba. Cuba's too Catholic.
What if Herman Cain came up to your car? What would you tell him? He's the front runner right now. What would you say to the man?
I'd say, buena suerte, señor. Not in this lifetime or the next. How about, are you kidding? This man? No, he's not going to beat in an election, His Excellency. And that's what I call him. 44th President Barack Hussein Obama.
You're not a fan of Obama either?
Oh, of course I am.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, indeed.
Okay.
He's brought hope to millions of Americans.
In what
real
form?
Real hope. In what form?
But what?
Don't ask me. Real hope, period. Okay, consider Social Security. A lot of Americans are on Social Security, disability, or retirement. Everyone's going to get Social Security raises. Again, His Excellency will...
Why do you call him His Excellency?
Because he is excellent, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And George Washington refused this title. What shall we call you, sir? They wanted to make it pink. Mr. Washington said, call me Mr. President. I don't care what anybody calls His Excellency Mr. Obama.
Yeah,
I call him His Excellency.
Sure.
And I think that he should take, or at least allow people to address him as such, who are of that opinion.
Mm-hmm. That's His Excellency.
Yes.
Can you believe that? Calling
that
Obama
was,
His Excellency? Because
that was stupid.
Because he turned around and finally signed in the cost of living increase on Social Security after denying it for two solid years. Meanwhile, government workers get their pay increase, their COLAs or whatever. But those that are on disability, those that are retired, they don't get their cost of living increase. Oh, but suddenly Obama signed it this year. So now you got to credit him for giving the Social Security people, what is it, $20 more a month?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is, with the consistent outsourcing and with this continuing to happen and with a growing population inside the country, eventually it's going to lead to the formation of a welfare state, because the people who are in the country will not be employed, because the jobs will be overseas. And they will be bringing people from overseas into the universities to be educated. So So you're going to have a population of people inside the country who will not be working. So therefore, they're going to have to be subsidized by the government.
Yes. We are not educating our youth. And that's the whole problem. You've got people coming out of college with no skills. Basket weaving? Oh, fine. Let's see. Art? What do you call them? Art critics that can look at a painting and tell you what you're supposed to see in a painting, but they have no marketable skills.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, John, let me ask John the question real quick. How is one supposed to follow your show if there's no button to follow your show?
No, well, I don't actually have a show. I call into the Perry Steele show almost every other night, and I give my opinion on his show. So if you want to listen to me, you can listen to Perry Steele. He comes on at 11 p.m. or East Coast Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio.
So who is Perry Steele? Is he a liberal, conservative, what?
I would say Perry Steele, like at this point, I would say he's more of an independent like myself. I wouldn't say he endorses either, like I don't think he endorses like any party at this point.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just curious because I actually had never heard of him.
Well, Perry Steele does have his own show. Matter of fact, Cool Mike at one point had been co-hosting with him. Matter of fact, we've got up in the chat room, we've got Dr. Jones. He's on. He's got his own show, Dr. Jones. And we've got Tesla on there. Conservatism is not an option. So we've got a bunch of good people out there with good shows. Okay, but what you think about this fool that, you know, wants to call Obama his excellency? Now, think about this. How many executive orders has Obama signed? He's got 99 to date. And that's the most that any president has ever signed. Can you believe that? 99 executive orders?
Yeah. Well, Obama is trying to usher in a social democracy in which he increases the powers of the government beyond anything that we've seen before.
That is true. Now, they're having the Democratic National Convention in North Carolina, and that's going to be next year. But Obama is so beholden to unions that on the Democratic National Convention, they are actually not using any local business in the Charlotte area that is not a union shop.
Whoa. I thought blatant discrimination in labor practices were illegal.
All right, well, here's a clip from Red State. Let me play this one where they turn around and they question, you know, what he's doing here.
It's a subject that's been a hot button in the Charlotte mayor's race, with Republican Scott Stone claiming the DNC contract opened the doors for Charlotte to lose jobs.
Local workers are being denied opportunities. They're going to out-of-state unions, potentially. This is what I've been talking about for weeks. We've got to fight for local jobs going to local workers.
Mayor Anthony Fox says allegations that the DNC contract steered jobs toward union shops are untrue.
It speaks to the use of labor within the region. This idea that someone from Alaska is going to take a job from someone in Charlotte is absolutely ridiculous.
Now, that is blatantly untrue. There's an article in Red State, and there's a guy who owns a print shop. And one of the reasons why it caught my eye is my husband and I used to have a printing business, and we were not a union shop. And Charlotte, North Carolina is a right-to-work state, the same as South Carolina. So you don't have to be a union member to get a job. So this guy's name is John Monteith, and he's a North Carolina print shop executive. And all the printing business went to a D.C. firm because the D.C. firm was unionized, and he is not. All right? It went to a company called Hargrove that has more than 3,000 union personnel, and it's based in Washington, D.C. metro area. Isn't that interesting? Now, it's not only just the print shop. It's not only just this one print shop. It's also union workers in the hotels and restaurants. And this is a clip where they altered the voice of the hotel worker, where he's telling the reporter that he's going to be furloughed during the convention. And this is straight from the police.
Can I ask you a question really quick?
Yes.
So is it true when the DNC comes here that you were going to be laid off for about a week?
Yeah, it is true. It's unfair. It's not right. But that's what's happening. You know, what can you do about it?
I mean, from what I understand, like, the mayor is bringing in unions to come in and work for you guys. I mean, is that, like, what are you going to do for a week?
Well, honestly, it's a little insulting, the fact that they've got to bring people in to do our job in our city. So, to me, it's insulting. We're going to sit at home and I guess take a mini vacation, but either way.
I mean, it's not going to bother your bill that you're gone for a week of work. Like, are you going to need to make up the time?
You know what? They haven't gone over all the repercussions of what's going to happen with that. I don't know all the facts yet. So it worries me because it's an unknown. It's an unknown, and we don't really know what's going to happen that week. So.
Now, I know the clip wasn't all that great, but he's saying flat out, his boss told him that because you're not a union member, they have to bring in people from outside of North Carolina that are union members to work the very same job he would have been working. That's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. It was Red State's Ben Howe that broke the story about the discrimination. Now, supposedly, the mayor of Charlotte, his last name is Fox, said that it was going to bring in, what was it, $150 million? I'm trying to find the figure of how much money it was supposed to generate into Charlotte business. $150 million for a local economic impact. But how can you have a local economic impact when you're not using local workers? Absolutely amazing.
That is a good point.
So if you're not a union employee and you live in Charlotte, do not expect to find a job at the Democratic National Convention next year.
But isn't, like, once again, isn't that blatant race or employment discrimination?
Well, I don't know, especially since the NLRB wants the Boeing plant here in South Carolina to become unionized. Right? So
that's
how are you
going
to bring up a complaint to the NLRB saying I'm having my job discriminated against because I'm non-union? They're not going to even let you walk in the door.
Well, you know what? Someone needs to force their hand because, see, this is what these companies aren't. They're not willing to really, truly stand up for their rights. This is something that if they want to be this dirty, You fight this all the way to the Supreme Court, because I guarantee you, if something like this was to get to the Supreme Court, the NLRB would be greatly smacked down.
I only hope.
I really believe that, and not to mention, Congress, specifically the House. The legislative branch of our country, why are they allowing the executive branch to run roughshod over all the other systems or all the other branches? What happened to our systems of checks and balances? Yes, I paid attention in American history, so I know all about the checks and balances.
Now, today is election day, all right? And there is an election going on in Charlotte right now for mayor. And the Democratic mayor, Anthony Fox, is facing a GOP challenger, and the GOP challenger's name is Scott Stone. So if anyone's in the city of Charlotte and you're registered to vote there, go out there and vote for Scott Stone today.
How's he doing?
So far I have no idea because it's way too early for any polls to be coming forward. But Scott Stone is the one who actually went public with a lot of this, saying, hey, listen, how can you have a convention here and not use local businesses? There's a Charlotte business owner who was told by the DNC, quote, he was told the convention was looking to use local contractors to run the project, but union labor to staff it. And then he said he was told he would have to sign an agreement stating he would use union labor for the project. And he quoted this in Political, of all things, that's not too kind to us. We asked the question, how do you want to use local when no one local is unionized? And this is what Scott Stone is coming up against. Matter of fact, the Ritz-Carlton Hotel that Obama himself is staying in has already told the staff they would be laid off during the convention because they're not unionized. And matter of fact, the employee's voice that I played is an employee of the Ritz-Carlton.
You know what I would do if I was them? Be like, okay, so you're laying us off because we're not union. Well, do you want us? Nah. If I was all those employees being laid off, I would say it better be with pay, because you blatantly discriminated against us, and we're going to... Because, see, here's the thing. Since the NLRB is so blatantly biased, a lot of people... Here's something else that a lot of people don't realize. You can bypass the NLRB, and the American people can raise such a stink in Washington to bring such negative See, here's the thing. You need to bring a lot of negative publicity to, instead of Wall Street, you need to start bringing negative publicity to the people in Washington. And I mean you speak the truth, but you don't let it die. Just like the liberal left does to us, you don't let the things die. That's my whole point of contention there. But I wish I could stay for another hour to the final end of the show, but I gotta go get myself cleaned and get dressed for school and go finish up classes, even though I'm anyway, I'll be finishing up classes. I won't get to graduate, but I'll just be done. So anyway.
All right. Well, Thomas, you got a show going on tonight, or when's your next show?
My next show is tomorrow, and I am I'm interviewing Dominique Huff of 10th Amendment Media Group. So it ought to be a very good show. It's going to be on at 5:30 Central Time, 6:30 Eastern, and I got some new music. So you guys. I'm gonna keep all my other music. So I have mellow music, I have Christian rap, and I have the one song that I've been wanting for a while, and I finally got it, and it's the new theme song of my show, and it's called Never Give Up, and it's by Yolanda Adams. So if you want to hear it tomorrow, you have to tune in. And I promise you all one thing, it's going to hype you up because it's a powerful song. Anyway.
Okay, great, Thomas. And you're known as the Invisible Conservative on Blog Talk Radio.
Actually, my username is the Invisible Conservative, but the official name of my show now is the Visible Conservative because I'm no longer invisible. People know who I am and people like my show, so... Can't say I'm invisible any longer. So.
Well, all right. I hope people stop in and visit your show. Thanks a lot, Thomas. And
all
have fun in school.
I will.
Okay. Going over Obama and some of the stuff that we've got going on, I pulled up a list of some of the unions that have been donating to the Democratic cause. And you wonder why, the Democratic Convention has insisting on unions. Let's see. We've got the federal, state, and county municipal employees. Let's see. For the last decade, they gave $40 million. Let me get the numbers right. $40 million to the Democrats. And they gave just a little over $500,000 to Republicans. We've got the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They gave close to $30 million to the Democrats, And to the Republicans, a little more than 1,679,000. That was real generous, 679,000. Let's see, we've got the National Education Association. And let's spread a little bit more evenly. Let's see, we've got almost 28 million went to Democrats. And the total amount the teachers gave Republicans is 2 million. Service employees, the SEIU, the purple people leaders with their T-shirts, they gave 26 million to the Democrats. And, oh, man, they were really generous to the Republicans. They gave 98,000. They didn't even make it to 100,000, 98,000. Communication Workers of America, another 26 million to the Democrats. And the Republicans got a measly 125. Let's see. Service employees are listed twice. There must be two different branches. So combined, it looks like about 52 million combined to Democrats, and combined to Republicans, just a little over 3 million. Laborers union. Here we go. 25, almost 26 million. And to Republicans, a mere 2 million. Here we got teachers again. American Federation of Teachers, almost 26 million. And they were really generous to the Republicans. They gave them a whole $200,000. United Auto Workers, hey, can we see, say, GM? 25 million. And to Republicans, 182, almost 183,000. Teamsters, almost 25 million to Democrats. Republicans got less than 2 million. They got 1.8. Carpenters Union, 24 million to Democrats. And hey, we did better on this one. Republicans got 2.6 million. Machinists and Aerospace Workers Union, almost 24 million. And man, they were really, really generous to Republicans. We got 226,000. You know, do you get the theme here that unions prefer Democrats over Republicans? And then you wonder why in Charlotte they insist on union workers. Let's see, Iron Workers Union. To Democrats, they got 11.6 million. And the Iron Workers Union didn't even make it to a single million with Republicans. They got 936,000. Postal Workers, American Postal Workers Union, got almost $12 million to Democrats and just a little over $500,000 to Republicans. The National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, over $8 million went to Democrats. Hey, a little bit fairer here. We got $2.2 million went to Republicans. That evened out a little. And Seafarers Union, $6.7 million to Democrats, $1.2 million to Republicans. And that is why the Democratic National Convention prefers to have union workers in Charlotte, and union workers or non-union workers in Charlotte are going to be furloughed, laid off, fired, kaput for that entire week. So how do you feed your family if you're living paycheck to paycheck? If you're a person that's working in a hotel, you're earning a little bit above, maybe at minimum wage, a little bit above. And you're a maid cleaning rooms and you're earning minimum wage, or if you're a waitress in a restaurant, you don't get minimum wage. You get less because they rely on your tips, you know, to make up the difference. What are these people that are living at or just slightly above the poverty level to do without a full paycheck for a week? Just so the Democratic National Committee Convention can cater to union employees. You've got someone earning, I don't know what minimum wage is, $7.95, I don't know, less than $8 an hour. Or you can have a union employee who's earning $15, $17, $20 an hour. Where's the fairness? Where's the honesty? Where's the fairness? Where's the transparency that we were promised? I don't seem to see it. I don't seem to see it at all. Well, I'm going to take a short break here and pay a little bit of my friend Don Fortney, and you can find his music here on teapartymusic.webs.com. And this is Don Fortney, who does my opening song and my closing song. He made it specially for me, called American. And this is his song, Loving Liberal Right.
I want a right to a decent meal and a right to a good home. Just got a right to health care. How about a right to a cell phone? Just give me one more right to a job that I like. The government can't be too liberal with my loving liberal rights. Oh, where is the America, home of the free? It's right here before your very eyes, with more rights than you can see. And let's rewrite the Constitution. It's a living document. Just make up one more right for me and one more entitlement. Remember when there was free speech on the radio and TV? The Fairness Doctrine took care of that. We lost another liberty. Second Amendment allowed us to defend our property. But it's guns that kill people, they said. Another law for me. Oh, where's the America, home of the free? It's right here before your very eyes, with more rights than you can see. And let's rewrite the Constitution. It's a living document. Just make up one more right for me, and one more entitlement. We need a right to vacation. How's about Disneyland? I'm sure Jefferson, Madison, and Franklin would all endorse that plan. And let's grant reparations to the Indians and the blacks. But we must include the Irish, the Italians, the Jews, and the Japs. Oh, where is this America, home of the free? It's right here before your very eyes, with more rights than you can see. And let's rewrite the Constitution. It's a living document. Just make up one more right for me, and one more entitlement. Up one more right for me, one more entitlement.
Okay, that was Don Fortney. And again, you can find his music at teapartymusic.webs.com. I also put up in the chat room the link to the Joe Frazier film, and it is indiegogo.com/Joe Frazier film. And if you go onto the website, they have here River Horse is the person that did the film, has spent 4 years researching and developing a documentary film on Joe Frazier. And the film is called Joe Frazier, When the Smoke Clears. It tells a remarkable story of how a man from humble roots became a household name. His first fight with Muhammad Ali more than 40 years ago was like the moon landing in its global reach, but who has seen this great boxer and complex man beyond the shadow of his greatest rival? Joe Frazier, When the Smoke Clears, is the story of the real Joe Frazier. It's more than just a boxing film. It is the story of a son's love and admiration for his father. It's about community and the black experience in the 20th and 21st century America. Through unique access and observational footage, Joe Frazier, When the Smoke Clears, captures the real Joe Frazier and tells his story. The film includes interviews with boxers Larry Holmes, Bernard Hopkins, and Marvis Frazier, his son, boxing trainer Angelo Dundee, boxing journalist Thomas Hauser, and Larry Merchant, and many more expert and personal voices. Joe even addresses the Uncle Tom accusations made by Ali during the very heated exchanges in the run-up to the fight of the century. Now, despite the fact that Joe's fights with Ali are among the most watched sporting events in history and part of a shared cultural history, the cost of including this footage makes it prohibitive for us as independent filmmakers to tell Joe's story in a way that conveys the complete scale of his epic life. Their limited production budget has allowed them to clear the festival rights to raise investments, but without additional finance, this unique project will not be able to be released either for broadcast or on DVD. So they are looking for donations. For $5, you will receive Brought to You on the DVD credit and a $5 voucher for the DVD purchase. For $20 donation, you can receive a website credit plus a copy of the DVD. For $50, you get the DVD and a special thanks credit on the DVD sleeve. And for $100, you'll get a signed copy of the DVD. So take a look at that website and see if we can help get this Joe Frazier film released. And that was made, like I said, 2 years ago, and they haven't been able to release it yet. So take a look at it. It's Indiegogo.com, Joe Frazier Film. And ex-hyphenated American says, goodbye, Smoking Joe. Yes, he will be missed. He is a legend. And having been born and grown up just right down the street from where I am, there is, matter of fact, his family still lives on the track of land, the 10 acres. And guess what? The name of the street is called Joe Frazier Boulevard. And the last year he was here in Beaufort to receive the Palmetto Award from Governor Sanford. Before he left office. So, Smoking Joe, yes, we will be missing you. So, again, please visit the website, Indiegogo.com, and / Joe Frazier Film. And matter of fact, Joe Frazier, his family has a website up for him, and I just had that link in front of me, and what did I do with it? I got so many pieces of paper here, you know. Guess what? The link to his website is very simple, joefrazier.com. So I'll put that up in the chat room too, so if anyone wants to visit his website. He does have some memorabilia up there for sale, and very interesting biography and so forth is on it. And it is www.joefrazier.com. And that link is up also in the chat room. We got about 15 minutes left. Our call-in line is still open, so please feel free to call in. It's 917-889-3675. I want to welcome everyone into the chat room and thank you for joining us on the show. So please give a call in and give me your thoughts on what we've been talking about today. Just something that caught my eye as I was doing my research. There are three governor races open right now, and one is in Mississippi, and we expect that to be done. It looks like on the governor races, the three races going on, one will probably remain Democratic and two will go to Republicans. We've got one in Louisiana, Kentucky, and Mississippi. Those are the three races going on right now. So it looks like Kentucky may keep, let's see, what's the prediction here? Looks like the Democratic governor there will remain Steve Beshear. That's being predicted. But Mississippi will remain Republican, and Bobby Jindal in Louisiana definitely will get a second term here. So that's what's going on in the Democratic race. Excuse me. Next year, you're going to have every single seat in the House. All 435 seats in the House of Representatives will be up for election. That's going to be a free-for-all. I mean, I'm telling you. The closer we get to next November, it's going to be a whole big free-for-all. And as they're predicting right now in the Senate races for next year, up there's going to be 31 seats up in the Senate. 21 of them are Democratic currently, and 10 of them are Republican. And they're predicting that the partisan breakdown will be 51 go. Well, this is way too early to even try to predict this one. But in 2012, 31 Senate seats will be up. So the entire House and 31 seats in the Senate will be up. Plus, we also have the presidential election, too. So you're sitting here listening to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. And I started to mention something I came across, just one of these weird things as I was poking around the Internet. And the Supreme Court is going to be hearing a case concerning warrantless searches. And this is something every one of us should really start to take a good look at. How many of us have new cars with the GPS tracking in them? Well, it seems law enforcement has been using the GPS tracking to track individuals without using a search warrant. The Obama administration, let's see, the case is being argued today, and it will have implications for other high-tech surveillance techniques besides just GPS. The Obama administration is appealing a ruling that threw out the drug conspiracy conviction of Antoine Jones of Washington because FBI agents and local police installed a GPS device on his car and collected travel information without a search warrant. The government argued that the people have no expectation of privacy concerning their travel on public streets, and they used the GPS device to help link Jones to a suburban house used to stash money and drugs. He was convicted and sentenced to life in prison before the Federal Appeals Court in Washington overturned the conviction. The appellate judge said the authorities should have had a warrant and pointed to the length of the surveillance, which was a month, as a factor in their decision. An unusual array of interested groups backs Jones, including the Gun Owners of America and the Council on American-Islamic Relations and the ACLU and an association of truck drivers. The group says GPS technology is much more powerful than beeper technology police once used in surveillance. But the Department of Justice says the GPS device is no different from a beeper used with the High Court's blessings in 1983 to help track a suspect to his drug lab. The court said then that people on public roads have no reasonable expectation of privacy. The Justice Department says the GPS devices are especially useful in early stages of an investigation when they can eliminate the use of time-consuming stakeouts as officers seek to gather information. And other appeal courts have ruled that search warrants aren't necessary for GPS tracking. And they will consider, the Supreme Court is going to consider two related issues, whether a warrant is needed before installing the device or using GPS technology to track a vehicle. It's interesting because now this is a really, really slippery slope because now if law enforcement, without your knowledge, can attach a GPS device to your vehicle. What would happen then if they activate the GPS device in your cell phone and then track you that way? You also have GPS devices automatically loaded in new cars. What if they were able to activate them without a warrant? So I sincerely hope the Supreme Court will rule in favor of having a warrant on this one. It scares me. It really does scare me, the fact that they can decide to track your movements without having to show just cause. So give me a call in and or put something up in the chat room and give me your opinion on this one. And this is what is going on in the Supreme Court today. So you've got elections going on today. Most of them are all small local elections, but you do have three governors up. And next year we're going to have the entire House of Representatives will be up for election. 31 will be up for election in the Senate. And what else do I have here? Well, it looks like the field is starting to narrow down in some of these primaries. And there is a website I found, but I'm not paying the dues to get into this one. It's called thegreenpapers.com that breaks it down. And they'll allow you to take a basic look at it. But if you want to get down to the website, it's like $200 and some odd just to, as for a membership for a year. And I do believe, Isaac, you still here? Isaac?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, what do you think of the show so far today?
That was a great show. I'm loving it.
Oh, great. Excellent. And we have other people in the chat room that also have excellent shows. We've got Dr. C. Robert Jones, Ph.D. He has an excellent show. We've got Tesla. He's got his Socialism is Not an Option. So, Isaac, where are you from? I see a 510 area code. Where's that?
I'm from Oakland.
Ah.
Oakland, California.
Okay. And what do you think about these Occupy Oakland protests?
Well, I don't know, man. I really can't.
You're not paying attention to him. Okay, we lost Isaac. Maybe he was an Oakland protester. Anyway, oh, man. Now, I came across something else also interesting. You know, Zuccotti Park is the park that the Occupy Wall Street is in right now. And what I didn't realize is that the person the park is named after has connections that actually goes into the Obama administration and also connections directly into the Biden family. Zuccotti, this man, Zuccotti is a co-chairman on the board of a $3.2 billion company called Brookfield Properties. All right, it's a multi-billion dollar real estate development firm. Now, he previously had ties to the park and city government about, you know, four decades ago, back in the 70s, when he was appointed deputy mayor for New York City. All right, it also has links directly into the city government through Mayor Bloomberg's, what do you call her? Would you call her a girlfriend, his lover, Diana Taylor, who sits on the board of the Brookfield Board of Directors, which is co-chaired by Zuccotti. All right, and Ms. Taylor definitely is the mayor's girlfriend or whatever you want to call her. And then let's see. Now, the union leader of New Hampshire reported that the Obama administration has backed a local wind farm tied to Brookfield. Hey, does this sound a lot like Solyndra? So in New Hampshire, they have a wind farm that's run by Brookfield Properties, and it seems to be on shaky footing. And guess what? They got a financial bailout, and they were backed by, let's see, $2.7 billion private fund needed in federal loan guarantees. So Zuccotti has gotten a green energy bailout from the Obama administration. Now, why would Obama bail out Brookfield? Well, it goes directly back over to Joe Biden. Joe Biden's son, Robert, is a partner in a law firm, a D.C. lobbying firm, I mean, Oldacre, Biden, and Bel Air. And this lobbying firm was hired by, guess what, Brookfield. So here we go. Here we go. Occupy Wall Street. The reason why they're not forcing them out of the park or anything like that, it goes directly back into the Obama administration. It's amazing, and you're going to see this one now, Brookfield Properties, Obama, Solyndra, and all the other green energies that the Department of Energy did these bailouts to, one by one, they're hitting the fan. And they're hitting the fan big time. Well, you're listening to Sudden Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm going to take a little bit of a 5-minute break, play a little bit of the Gatlin Brothers, and that's America. It's Americans, that's who.
They have fed hungry people. They have clothed people who didn't have clothes. They build shelters people sleeping out in the cold. They've done all the good things good people are supposed to do. Who are these good people? Americans, that's who. They have freed millions of people from the tyranny of evil men. They've handed the government back into the people's hands. You won't read much about it in the paper. I'm telling you it's true. Who are these good people? Americans, that's who. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
some have paid the ultimate price. So I can stand right up and tell you how I feel about it, and what I know in my heart is true. Who are these good people? Americans, that's who.
Here on Blog Talk Radio. We're down to our final few minutes. I want to say rest in peace and God bless Smoking Joe Frazier. Thank you for all that you have done for the boxing industry and for your fans. Rest in peace. I will be back again on Friday, and Friday is Veterans Day, so we're going to have a very special Veterans Day episode. I'll have two guests. One is Anthony Tedesco. He's a musician who has a new album out called Exorium, and proceeds from the sale of his album will be going for Treats for Troops. I'll have him on with some of his music, and I'll also have Debbie Lee from America's Mighty Warriors. Her son, Mark Lee, was the first SEAL killed in Operation Iraqi Freedom back in 2006, and she has America's Mighty Warrior Fund that benefits veterans, active military, and their family. So it'll be a fun, packed episode on Friday in honor of all our veterans. So please join us with that. And then next week on Tuesday, I will have Mike Holler back, Mr. Constitution. He has been returned. He's returning for popular demand. Everyone loved talking the Constitution with Mike Holler. And then following that, I will have Frank Aquila, who wrote the book about Sarah Palin, Out of Nowhere. So on our next few shows, we will have a lot of fun. So please join us on Veterans Day and help us honor all of our military veterans, as well as our active military serving bravely for us and for our freedom. So until then, enjoy your week. And remember, if there is an election near you today, get out there and don't forget to vote. And let's get this nation marching. We've got 362 days left before we fire Obama. So until Friday and Veterans Day, I will see you.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
Americans.